This week on the BOAG World Show, we discuss how we should be prioritising our workload. Should we deal with incoming jobs on a first-come, first-served basis, or is there a better way? This week's show is sponsored by Team Gantt and Gather Content. Hello and welcome to the BOAG World Show, the podcast about all aspects of user experience design, digital strategy and working in digital. My name is Paul BOAG and joining me, as always, is Marcus Lillington, who picks that very moment to take a drink so that he wasn't prepared to say anything.
Just I do everything to annoy you, Paul. It's my job.
I see from the video that you have stolen a mug from the University of Glasgow.
We got loads of these. We did some work for them. We did all sorts of work for them a few years ago, and they appeared one day. It wasn't me, but somebody stole them. We were sent them, probably.
Let's go with that, shall we? Although that isn't as good. I had a friend once who worked in digital who worked with Ben and Jerry, right? and they gave her a fridge. You know, one of those freezer little fridge things.
Yeah, yeah.
Full of Ben and Jerry ice cream. And they continued to top it up through the entire lifetime of her working with them.
That's really nice. I came in yesterday to the office to a really nice thing. You know, it's like, ooh, a big parcel with my name on it. And I don't know if she ever listens to the podcast, but she's on the Slack channel. G. Watson, who's down in Perth in Australia. We helped her out on a project yonks ago for a client of hers, one of the colleges down there. And she basically had sent a thank you for Dan and I helping her out because she's from Yorkshire, Betty's Bakery in Harrogate. Lots of biscuits and chocolates and cakes and things like that. So it was like Christmas. Well, I felt it made me feel all Christmassy.
Yeah.
So thank you, G, if you listen.
Well, she does occasionally. I mentor her, actually.
Do you?
She's one of the people that I mentor, yeah. So I talk to her regularly.
Betty's very fancy, says Claire. Really nice. Some of the best shortbread I've ever eaten. Fantastic.
Ooh, shortbread.
Yeah. Well, so your mentorship didn't do very well. She had to come back to us.
Oh, to ask one question of Dan about how the hell his CSS worked. Yeah, I know. I went straight into that. It was actually me that told her to go get in contact with you because I took a look at the CSS and I went, bloody hell, this is, I didn't understand it. But Dan sorted her, I believe, which is good.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then she's sort of saying, oh, I've got to pay for this. And I'm like, well, don't be daft. Got a lovely present. Thank you.
Oh, okay. There you go. So I've decided it's great being old.
There are some advantages.
Do you know, I sat down. I've got to do, in a couple of weeks' time, I've got to do a two-day workshop. So I'm going up to Doncaster with an organisation to do 2 days of workshopping. And I, you know, because I've got a bit of a cold, as I might have mentioned subtly in the last show, I was like, I don't know whether I can be asked to do this. This just feels like an insurmountable job. But I sat down and forced myself to look at it. And it's that sudden realization that, oh, yeah, this is just, I need to take a bit out of this presentation and this from here and then just kind of assemble it together. And I decided that is one of the great things about getting old. Is that you've seen it all before, you've done it all before. And so, everything's easier as you get older. Don't you find that?
Press-ups are harder.
What? All right. Yeah. Absolutely. Totally. But it's like the older I've got, you know, things don't faze me anymore like they used to. And I know what needs to be said. And I know, you know, nobody ever asks me a question that I go, bloody hell, I've never heard that before. I'm just, you know, I'm more confident, more comfortable doing my job. It's great. I've decided I'm happy being old, finally. I've made that decision. I've come to terms with it.
Okay, I'm going to remember that. Because you'll probably only have to remember it till next week.
Well, you know what I'm like. You've worked with me a long time, Marcus. You know how inconsistent I am and how I change my mind every 5 minutes.
Yes, I was rolling my eyes internally there. God, here we go. This is the current trend.
Can you imagine how my wife feels living with this all the time?
She must be very thick skinned, that's all I can say.
Well, do you know, she just ignores me. I think that's her tactic.
Yeah.
She just doesn't pay, which is why I have to do a podcast, because otherwise nobody would ever listen to anything I ever said. So there you go. Right. Yes. What are we talking about this week? Yes, we're supposed to be doing a podcast, aren't we? That's what we do.
This was about... this is stuff we've already talked about before earlier in the season, that you're rehashing using slightly different words. Is that... I think that's what you said at the end of last week's. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, I might have said that. I like to think of it as building upon deepening into...
Yeah.
Two very interesting subjects that we've been covering on the show. The first one, we did a show on organizational skills, and so we're gonna go take some aspects of that, and we're gonna take some aspects of last week's show that was recorded yesterday, which is very confusing. Last week's show on assessing the new, and we're gonna use some aspects of that.
It's like a big summary show, isn't it? This should be the last one in the series.
yeah, it should be, really. To delve deeper into how to get our work priorities straight. How are we going to prioritise the work that we do, and how do we know we're working on the right stuff at the right time? But before all of that, we've got the most important bit of the show after the joke, obviously. I'm basically just a filler for Marcus's bits. I think is how most people see it these days. We need to rename it the Marcus World Show or something. Ooh, we can't call it the Lillington World Show, because that would just, you know, be painful.
I don't want all that pressure, Paul. I'm quite happy just, you know, filling in.
Sliding into retirement.
Ooh, I wish. No, a long way from that.
Yeah, I know. Depressing, isn't it? Yeah.
No, not really. I thought you were happy, Paul, about being older and, you know.
I'm happy. Yeah, but I'm not old enough. That's the trouble.
Yeah,
but by
the time you get to being old enough, you'll then feel decrepit and hacked off with feeling so decrepit.
That's
what you've got to look forward to.
I just need to be 3 years older. That's all I need. How old are you now, Marcus?
52.
See, you can go on saga cruises.
Weirdly, I was expecting to be massively targeted by saga. Nothing at all.
Oh.
Maybe it's a bit older now. Maybe it's 55 these days for saga.
No, it's 50. My dad lectures on saga cruises, you see.
Yeah.
He's really made me want to go on a saga cruise. That is the saddest thing that I have ever admitted in a public venue before.
One of the wonderful headscapers, Chris Henderson, who is just 30, has been going on cruises with Mrs. Henderson for years. They love it.
Yeah, I'm not saying... And I've been on cruises, and I love cruises.
I don't. I've never
been
on
one.
I've never been on one. It does not appeal to me at all.
It's interesting,
isn't it? Because I imagine it's full of Daily Mail readers being sort of, you know... with their drunken Brexit opinions. Pulling into beautiful Mediterranean ports and not wanting to go and see anything because it's full of foreigners. I'm painting a picture here, aren't I? It's probably a little
bit unfair. You are painting a picture here. And I think you're painting a picture of some cruises very accurately. but I don't think all are like that by any means.
No.
I tell you the reason why I like cruises. This is nothing... How did we get onto cruises? Anyway... The reason that I like cruises is because there are certain places in the world, if I'm honest, that I'd like to go to, but either I'm slightly nervous about going to it, or alternatively, I'm too old to deal with the backpacking kind of, slumming it version of it. So with a cruise, you could go somewhere... I don't know, like India or, a developing country. And you could just kind of pop in and experience experience the poverty and then go back to your 5-star floating hotel.
Do I have to edit that out? Not sure.
Oh yeah, Lewis is giving it a brilliant phrase. I don't know whether he's just made that up or whether he found it online, called peak privilege. You have a little peak and then go back to your privilege. I like that. That's good. Yeah.
I quite like the idea of going around a bunch of islands on a boat. That's okay.
Ah, yeah, but that's a different thing. Yeah, I'd like to do that in the Pacific, right?
Oh, that's too far away. Far too far away. You got the Caribbean just over the water. That'd do,
yeah,
wouldn't it? You pretend to be a pirate and everything.
I could compromise on the Caribbean. If you twisted my arm, maybe.
Been there a couple of times. It's lovely. Anyway, yes.
Get on with your thought for the day.
Okay. Well, interestingly, Paul, I have just come back from a couple of days' workshop.
Oh, yeah. Did it go well?
It did, yes. It was cool. 2 days is a long time. I don't know how I've done these 5-day ones in the past. May have been drugs or something. I don't know. Anyway, yeah. Just come back from a couple of days' workshop for a university client, and it all went really well. But the experience reminded me of how sometimes you really need to have to think on your feet and be prepared to sort of refocus what you're working on, what the activities you're doing, and not blindly carry on with your preconceived agenda.
Do you know what helps with that?
What's that?
Being older. Because you've seen it all before.
Yeah, I suppose. I think it takes a little bit of bravery as well in front of a room of 20 people, which I guess you're more likely to do if you're older and you don't care as much. Anyway, so having a set agenda is obviously a good thing because it means that we can plan ahead and prepare stuff, which makes for more useful and interesting exercises, etc., etc. And we also tend to know, because we've done this loads of times before, there's a theme here, isn't there, that kind of one exercise will lead well into another. It will inform the next one. Mm-hmm. But sometimes what you thought would be a valuable task just isn't. So you need to stand up, pull the plug on it, explain why, sort of, because it's probably what everyone's thinking anyway, and then move on.
Yeah.
So this particular client is a new client to us, which is nice in the HE sector. And the project involves design and build, which is even nicer in the HE sector because we seem to be hired more and more just as consultants.
Yeah.
So it's lovely to be doing a design project. But specifically on this one, we're being hired to firstly kind of extend, in air quotes, an existing design that's okay, but doesn't really represent their brand. It's a bit safe. Mm-hmm. And two, create a pattern library / design system to give their team a kind of source of truth for the future, which is cool. But defining where the boundaries are on this is hard. There's a kind of understandable desire from them to please, can we keep as much as we can? And it's like, okay, but while ensuring that the new design truly represents the brand. So part of this workshop process, I guess it's more of an underlying part of it. It wasn't a specific sit down, this next hour we're going to cover this. It was like the whole thing was an underlying part of it, was to try and find out what things people really don't want or can't change. And one of those things was any major changes to content, which we didn't really know that, especially before the session. So we had plans to do a major page types review and rewire framing. But with a few notable exceptions, the pages aren't really going to change that much. So this is an example of, we had to kind of like think, well, there's not a lot of point in, right, we're going to do this page and not much is changing, and the next one, not much is changing. Just go, hang on a minute, let's spend our time more wisely. And in their case, the major changes are going to happen on a kind of like very focused component level. Not completely, but generally speaking, it's going to be, you know, the building blocks of the pages are going to change rather than the actual pages. So we changed tech to review individual components in detail, which took forever, but it was well worth it in the end. So my message here is basically, don't be afraid to say, hang on, this isn't working, let's look at it in a different way, because probably everyone will thank you for it.
Absolutely. And like you say, everybody's thinking it in their own heads anyway. So you're better off, you're better off coming out and saying it rather than carrying on regardless. So I think people respect you when you have that confidence to do that kind of thing. I think that tends to go down well. There's always somebody, but you know, that maybe sees it differently. But generally, I think people are pretty nice.
I've missed Andrew Miller. I really like Andrew's comments in the chat room. This is why Paul can only pop into places and leave before causing too much offence.
Hello, Andrew. It's nice, in inverted commas, to have you back.
Oh, thanks.
So, prioritising what we're talking about today. I mean, I have a format for this season, which is we look at why to do the thing, how to do the thing, and where you can learn more about doing the thing.
Yes.
Why prioritise? Do we really need to do that?
Well, it's bloody boring if you prioritise. If you just randomly do stuff, then it's more exciting. There's a reason prioritise.
You know, we joke about it, but I'm amazed at how few organisations do actually prioritise. You know, if you take the average digital team, you know, let's talk about Andrew's team as he's picking on me. Yes. You know, before I came along and helped them and showed them the light, they were ignorant Neanderthals that had no idea what they were doing.
Edit at 6:33.
No, he's in the room, Marcus. There's no point of editing it. He can hear me live. So, but, you know, digital teams often are organizing and managing their projects in an extremely ad hoc way, aren't they? You know, if we're honest about how most of us prioritize our workload, right? It's on who shouts the loudest, right? So which member of senior management is currently throwing their toys out of the pram? And what's most urgent? Oh, we've got to get this live by next Tuesday, you know?
There's another element as well, and this certainly applies to me. What's the most interesting thing to do? True, though, isn't it? Oh, I like doing this. I'll do that. Even though I don't actually need to do it for 3 weeks. But it's like...
Yeah.
Or what's easy, because I'm feeling a bit tired today.
That's exactly why I was doing what I was doing just before this podcast, was because I couldn't be bothered to do anything else. So absolutely, you know, in a lot of occasions, we're not really thinking it through. Lewis seems to have the best approach for prioritizing, which is follow the money. And I quite like that. I think that's, there we go, we're done. Prioritize by following the money, right? What's this Claire's just shared? Oh, Eisenhower's quadrants. Claire, we talked about that in the show on being organized, which is why it overlaps quite a lot. So it's a really good tool for prioritizing. And Eisenhower's quadrants basically argues that we spend far too much time doing on what's urgent and unimportant rather than what's important. So it's a really useful little tool, but just like Claire, half of us don't actually use it, even though we know it's a thing. So we're rarely really are we considering actually what is important. And you know, that is something I think we need to be spending a lot more time on. It's especially at a team level, right? I think that's where things often go wrong, and where, you know, I think a lot of individuals are very good at organizing themselves. But when we start working at a team level, politics start coming into play. And so there's a lot of kind of, well, this person is really quite important and we can't really ignore them. And so we start getting issues there. And the result of all of that is that, you know, things that can actually help us over the long term just don't get done because they never get prioritized. Actually, a pattern library, a design system, is a really great example of that. The number of digital teams that never get around to creating a pattern library, even though it could make them way more efficient in the long term, and they don't ever get around to doing that because that doesn't have a senior executive championing it that says we've got to get this done now. And it never say, you know, it never has a, you know, an urgent deadline on it that means it has to happen fast. Andrew's just posted a link to his pattern library that would have never happened if it hadn't been for my amazing advice and support. So I don't know why he's feeling all smug at the moment. Yeah, I might be pushing my luck at this point. I'll never get to work in the HE sector again. That's fine. Right. So yeah, there are certain things that never get done. We spend our entire life firefighting. So, you know, just dealing with the things that are immediately in front of us. And so you're always kind of going from one crisis to the next and never actually making any kind of strategic futures, you know, decisions. You're never designing or thinking about the future and planning for that long term. It's a tough environment, and it's not the way to build a long term team. So there are lots of things that we should be prioritizing, we aren't, from design systems to pattern to style guides to design principles. All of these things help to provide a good foundation on which to build, but we only achieve those things if we can prioritize. Okay. So that is why we need to prioritize. But before we move on to how to do that, let's first of all talk about our first sponsor of the show, which is Gather Content again. Which is a really great example of getting more organized and getting more structured. Most people organize their projects' content with an unholy combination of office tools, don't we? Oh, yeah. Send me the content. Oh, here's a PDF. Here's a Word document. Here's an Excel file. Here's a PowerPoint presentation that might have some content in that, you know, and it's just this almighty horrible mess. So Gather Content solves this problem, saving you time, money, and energy ultimately. So it helps you gather and organize your content into a single place, structure that content in the right format using templates, work collaboratively on your content creation in real time, manage what you want and what you do and when content's got to be delivered and all of that kind of stuff, and who can do what and who's got permissions to do what with content. And then finally, once you've done all that, once you've gathered all your content, you can easily migrate it into your CMS of choice or your tool of choice. So to find out more about how to be more productive with your content, get it out quicker, be more efficient, all of that, check out gathercontent.com. Okay, so let's talk about how to go about prioritizing. Well, there's kind of two areas that I want to look at here. One is how to prioritize the work. Well, it's two different ways of prioritizing the work we do on a website, all right? So one is prioritizing around a technical digital triage, which I will share in a moment. The other is to around a kind of hierarchy of users' needs. So let's look at those two. We'll look at the hierarchy of user needs first, and we will go from there. In my experience, a lot of people, as we were saying in the last show, get seduced by the new and shiny. And our websites are a great example of that. You know, I talked in the last show, didn't I, about, you know, getting obsessed with virtual reality or whatever it be. The big one, actually, the one that comes up time and time again in my experience with websites is personalization.
Oh, yeah.
We must make our website personalized, right? And
depends
so
what
that
you mean by personalised, though, doesn't it?
I mean, yeah.
There are ways of personalising sites that are actually really useful, you know, geographically,
absolutely,
maybe, things like that, which yeah, aren't as... But people tend
cumbersome
to mean, I want Amazon.
You know? Yeah, I want all of the users that go to my website to log in.
Yes,
right. Identifying exactly who they are, so that we can serve personalised content to them, which obviously nobody's ever going to do. But anyway,
yes, sorry,
we digress in a rant about personalisation.
Yes,
so personalisation is an example of, oh, it's a new and shiny thing, and so often it gets pushed up to the top of the list of things that we're doing, whether or not it's the most appropriate thing to be doing. Mm. Another example was a while back is, oh, we must have an app, right? Everybody needs an app. And with our
don't
websites,
they?
No.
I need one.
There you go. You need one, do you?
Yeah, I do.
The Marcus's joke app.
Well, there was one once, wasn't there?
There was, yes.
The joke app.
Nixed that. That was more of us wanting to play around with building apps, really.
Yeah.
Which is a classic example of, ooh, it was shiny and we wanted to have a go.
Yeah.
So.
Yes.
Yes. One of the things that we need to do as we prioritize our websites and work on our websites is make sure that we're approaching things in the proper order, that we have good foundations in place. You know, sometimes I think that talking about personalization feels like, you know, giving a starving child in Africa a motivational poster. It's a nice gesture, but it doesn't actually deal with their immediate issues, you know? And so actually, I was thinking about this a while, and I've written a blog post that I will link to in the show notes, about, well, what is that kind of hierarchy of things we need to consider with a website? And I kind of used Maslow's hierarchy of needs as a kind of basis, this idea that one thing builds upon another. That if, you know, in Maslow's hierarchy of needs, if you're not dealing with someone's underlying physiological needs, then there's no point of talking about their, you know, self-esteem or self-actualization and things like that. You've got to deal with the basics first.
Yeah.
So with your website, it's the very, very similar. So we should be prioritizing, first and foremost, are things accessible, right? Is your website accessible, irrespective of what device people are using, irrespective of whether they've got a disability, whether a temporary disability or a permanent disability, irrespective of the bandwidth they have available to us, all of those kinds of things, you know. At the most fundamental level, if your website is taking too long to load, if I can't view it on the particular device that I'm using, none of the rest matters. We touched on this, didn't we, in the last show?
We did.
Then up from that, once you've done that, then you need to start thinking about, well, is the content relevant? Does it tell users what they need to know, right? So if you are not 100% confident you are dealing with every question, every objection, every concern, anything that somebody might wants to know, then stop wasting your time on creating a VR app. You know?
Oh.
I know. I feel like a massive killjoy.
Not fair. But
I know it's not fair, Marcus, but that's life, I'm afraid. Life sucks. Then once you've got it relevant, then you can start. See, me as a user experience designer, right? We come along and say, well, everything has to be usable, right? Yeah, we have to make it as easy as to use as possible. But even that actually comes relatively late. If you can't access it, it doesn't matter whether it's usable or not. If the content is irrelevant, making it usable won't suddenly make it relevant. Right? So actually, usable doesn't come until after it's accessible and relevant, right? But once you've got those things in place, you do need to make it so that users can actually find the information they need. And only once you've done that do you need to start making it personal, You know, does the website cater for the individual user's specific needs, and whether it's then persuasive and so on and so on. So that's, I think, one of the fundamental ways of going about, you know, working out what you should be prioritizing and what you should be focusing on as you develop your website. All the time, keep asking yourself, are we focusing on the wrong thing? Are we getting ahead of ourselves? Are we trying to run before we can walk? But the real kind of tool that I wanted to share with people is a methodology that I've created. Sounds good. If you call it a methodology, it sounds good, doesn't it? Right? I've got a methodology. I've invented a methodology that I call digital triage. And I've rolled this out now across numerous organizations. And I think it really does go a long way to helping people prioritize the work that they do. It's not perfect. And I'll talk about its shortcomings after I've explained it. And it often needs adapting to individual organizations. But the basic principle, I think, stands. And the principle is based around an emergency situation, a medical emergency situation. So let's take, for example, an airplane crash. And first responders arrive on the scene. Now, the critical thing to understand in that situation is that there are far more jobs to be done, far more casualties, far more people that need attention than there are people to do the work. Okay? And that is the reality in almost all organizations. Pretty much every digital team that I ever work with, there are far fewer people to do the work than there are potential work that could be done. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So how do we address that? Well, in triage, in medical triage, what they do is they go from patient to patient without treating any patient initially, simply assessing each of those patients and working out which ones are most urgent to be dealt with. Now, interestingly, as a bit of an aside, if a patient is screaming and shouting and demanding attention, they normally don't get that attention because they must be reasonably okay if they can scream and shout, yes. Right? So I think there's an analogy to be drawn there within business, but I might be stretching the point slightly. Right. So anyway, back to the principle. So you've got a whole set of potential jobs, patients that need treating. Now we need a way of prioritizing those, okay? Well, what I've designed is basically a very simple point system where you assess jobs based on the number of points, or you assign a number of points to them. And those points are assigned based on a set of criteria. So we need to define what our criteria are. Now, the criteria you define is largely up to you. This is where we start customizing things on a per business basis. But I do have a kind of generic set that I use to start with. And there are four criteria I tend to use. And those four criteria are business objectives, user groups, user needs, and effort level, right? So let's delve into those a little bit more deeply. The first thing to say is notice there that there are a balance of two business focused criteria, business objectives and effort level, which is return on investment, mm-hmm. and two that are focused on users, user groups and user needs, right? So based on my experience, at least, too often companies are too focused on the business criteria and they lack the user focus thing. So I've tried to balance those two out. However, equally, I encounter a lot of digital teams that are entirely focused on user needs and kind of ignoring the business side of things as well. So it's really important to have the both. Right. So let's start with your business objectives. Really, though, the problem is that most organizations don't have clearly defined business objectives, which just blows my mind. It seems like the most fundamental thing. But instead, what they have is woolly company goals, like we want to increase revenue in the next quarter, or we want to decrease costs, or we want to improve market share. And these things exist in some kind of drawer somewhere, because basically what's happened is they create a company report, don't they, that says, you know, the next quarter we're going to increase revenue or whatever, and then it's sent out to employees and they just shove it in a drawer and forget about it. So dig that out, right, and use that as a basis to define business goals for your website. So increase revenue might be generate more leads. Right? That might be what the role of the website is in order to facilitate the aim of increasing revenue. If their aim is to decrease costs, it might, the website aim might be to reduce support queries. If they want to increase market share, the aim of the website might be to increase online visibility. So whatever, but you interpret them. And then you prioritize them. And that is key. You've got to prioritize. So typically, what you'll end up with is a prioritized list of business objectives. That's point one. Then you've got to think about your user groups, right? We all have multiple user groups we're trying to reach, but not all of those user groups are going to be equal in terms of the business benefit, right? So going back to our higher education example, you know, international students are more valuable than domestic students to the organization, right? Better or worse, that's the truth of it, okay? In some higher education institutions, postgraduates might be more important than undergraduates, but it kind of depends. So you'll all have different audiences. So we've got to then prioritize our business goals and prioritize our audiences. Then once we've done that, then each of those audiences will have different needs, right? Different things they want to achieve, want to do. So what we do is we identify the top few user needs for each of those separate audiences, okay? Now, we might do that through something called top task analysis, or we might do it through other methods. I don't really care, but you've got to end up with a prioritized list of user needs.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, you've got effort. Right. So then with each of those categories, we're going to assign a points value. I tend to use a 1 to 5 points value, but it doesn't really matter as long as the pointage is equal for each of the categories. So you give 5 points to a project if it's going to meet an absolutely critical business objective. You give it 1 point if it's going to meet a very unimportant business objective. Okay. With user groups, you do the same. You know, 5 points if it's going to appeal to a really important user group, 1 point if it's going to appeal to an unimportant user group. Now, there's a degree of interpretation that obviously that needs to go into this. For example, you'll have projects that try to appeal to multiple business objectives or multiple user groups. So you've got to make a decision. Yeah, okay, it might vaguely help a certain user group that's really important, but it's primarily aimed at a group that's less important. So you've got to be honest about it. With user needs, then you look at the particular primary group you're trying to reach, and again give it a 1 to 5 rating depending on how important the user need is within that group. And then finally, you give it a 1 to 5 rating based on how hard it will be to deliver the job. So if it's going to be really hard, it only gets 1 point. If it's a trivial matter, then it gets 5 points.
Yep.
All right. Okay. So what you now do is you take your list of projects and you assign points values to all of them, okay? So you end up with a stack, a prioritized stack of jobs to do, prioritized based on their point value. Then every time a new job comes along, You give it a point value and then slot it into the relevant place within the stack. Okay? So what that means is that some projects will never reach the top of the stack. If it's a bad idea, it'll never get to the top and never get done. Okay? Now, let's talk about some of the problems with it, because that's all great in principle. Let's talk about the practice and where some of the issues come up. The first thing is that obviously everybody wants their project done, right? So what you need to do is you need to create this as a policy, okay, in collaboration with the rest of the organization. So you can't just decide one day you're going to do this, right? You need to say, first of all, get everyone to agree that, you know, we need some kind of prioritization approach. And normally that's fairly straightforward, okay? Then you need to agree the criteria by which you should be prioritizing projects. And finally, then you need to get agreement on each of your prioritized, you know, user needs, user groups, etc., etc. Now, you'll find that that is a lot easier than arguing over every single project that comes in about when it should be done. You do it once and then it's done. You'll also find it's a lot easier because you're talking in the abstract rather than about people's personal projects. So it keeps it all very, you know, abstract. Then once you've got sign off on that, you've got some teeth now to be able to enforce this. But it's still not without its problems. Problem number one is that some projects, people come to you and they're urgent. There's a time, specific time date on these. And and even if they plan, I mean, first of all, you've got to start educating people they need to plan ahead, because you can't make guarantees about delivery dates because something more important might come in, okay? But secondly, you also need to say that that you need to publish your stack somewhere that people can see it. So they can see stuff moving up the stack and then they can plan accordingly, knowing that, okay, it's looking like this is going to be delivered, you know, around this time. And you can give people estimates and you can say, we think it might be delivered by this, but we can't guarantee it, okay? And that is quite a big cultural fit. Cultural shift, should I say. But it's realistic, because the truth is, that's happening anyway, right? More urgent things are coming in that are pushing other stuff out, okay? All you're doing is making it more visible and clearer to people that, you know, whether something's going to get pushed out and how fast you're getting through the stack that's there, right? So that's how I tend to talk about the time aspects. I say, well, things slip anyway, right? We're just being more honest about it. We're being more transparent about it. And we could give you estimates still, right? If you, the earlier you come to us, the more chance that it's got of getting to the top of the stack before your deadline. So talk to us soon. The other problem that comes along is the senior manager who says, I don't give a shit about your priorities. We're doing this now. All right. That's their prerogative. Okay. They are senior in the organization for a reason. But what you need to go back to those people and say is, okay, fine. It's totally within your remit to overrule my priorities, the policy we've put in place. But what that means, if you feel a need to overrule it, it means that there is something fundamentally wrong with my policy. So I'm happy to push your stuff to the front of the queue if you're happy to show me where my policy is wrong, right? How is my point system out of whack if your project didn't immediately jump to the top of the queue anyway, right? So the truth is, you can't stop these people doing what they want to do, but what you can do is make them pause and think about what they're doing. And getting them to look and revise the policy helps them do that. It helps them pause and take stock. The final problem that you will encounter is people going, I disagree with your pointing, right?
Yes.
So you've pointed it in this way. I think it should have 5 points. You've only given it 3 points, that kind of stuff. For that, again, that's fair enough. You should always do the first pass at this, but you're not perfect. You're not always going to get it right. So have an escalation path, right? Have a most digital teams of a certain size have some kind of oversight committee or board or some group of people that tell them what to do, right? And typically, organizations have this very dumbass policy where this board is having to sign off on every single project that comes along, right? And that just takes forever, right? And it slows everything down. So instead, you use that board to agree on your criteria. Okay, then you're the one doing the pointing and deciding on stuff on a daily basis. But when someone disagrees with you, it gets escalated back up to the board, the overseer group, and they point it and they revise your point system. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So that tends to be the system that I use. Go on.
Sorry, I was going to say, I suppose what is potentially missing there is, it could be a business objective. I'm thinking, if I was that kind of like I don't care manager, then it's the waiting, isn't it, that's the problem? Because I think what they would say is, we've just won some amazing thing. I'm making this up as I'm going along.
That's fine.
And we need to have. But there's a project needs to be done to support this amazing theme because it'll not be news in 6 months' time. But really, it's only just gonna. The only thing is it's helping is our brand. Let's say it means that.
Right.
Maybe a business objective is for the website to promote our brand, and really the only thing it's going to score 5 on is that it's not really a user thing. So it's never going to kind of like build up enough points across the board. So. How do you deal with that? Because you could argue that it is important, but it's only... how do you weight stuff is what I'm trying to say. Because if you just say...
Well,
do you know what I mean? It's like, so if you've got one objective...
Yeah.
If you've got 17 different objectives and you're hitting lots of different of those objectives, then you're automatically going to be better. But that, you know, maybe promoting brand is more important than 16 of those other ones. And I don't know how you deal with that.
Yeah, and that's absolutely fine. I said earlier that I had four groups of objectives, didn't I? I said that I had user needs, business objectives, user groups, and effort.
Yeah.
Now, I wouldn't end up with too many, right? But you could have more than that if you wanted to. You could have less than that if you wanted to. The other thing that you can do is I said you should point those all equally, right? And that's because in my world, business and user needs should be equally balanced, right? It's about both. But not every company and organization necessarily agrees with that, right? Yeah. Some organizations honestly believe you should put user needs before business needs, right? They're not that common, but there are organizations out there that do that. Yeah. So what they would do is put a multiplier onto user needs, right? So maybe it's you take the numbers of user needs and times it by 1.5 or something like that. And you could do the same with business needs. So although I say they should all be equally balanced, there's no reason that you have to do it that way, right?
I think it's great.
The core principle, it's the core principle here we're talking about, which is the idea of have criteria by which you judge things, give things scores and work through on that basis. That's what it boils down to.
Yeah. And you can argue Andrew, the toss over the detail, can't you?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I know Andrew in the chat room, they do this, but their criteria are different from what I originally introduced them to. Another organization I worked with is Ellen McCarthy Foundation, which is a charity, and they decided to take effort and use that as a divider. right? Because the more effort, that should, you know, it kind of offsets the others. So, so you can kind of do whatever maths you want. The only advice I would give with it is try and keep it as simple as possible. The more complicated it gets, the harder people struggle to understand the system, right? And if they don't understand the system, if it feels like a black box, then they're going to push against it. They're going to argue with it. They're going to disagree with it. If it's all transparent and open, people are much more likely to accept it.
Yeah, yeah. That's, though I agree with that, that's absolutely true. But if I was a difficult board member or whatever, I'd learn the system so I could game it. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. And that, yeah, yeah, absolutely. And that will always happen. You'll always get people that do that. You know, you'll get people right. Oh, yes, this is a project for this business objective when it bullshit it is. You know, it's not like that.
Exactly.
And you've got to be honest about it. You know, any system has flaws to it. And if you're a complete dickhead, for want of a better word, you can screw any system.
But I think, the principle, what you said there about just explaining to somebody, this is how we work, will just get their respect immediately. And they'll be interested in it. So I was just picking holes just for the sake of it, because it's my job on this podcast. But I think it's great.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you do need to pick holes in it, because you need to be prepared for the problems that will inevitably come up. Mm. You know, and that's why I picked holes in it myself, instead about, you know, people get upset about time and some people just overrule it and, you know, all of those kinds of things. And you do need to learn how to make the most of it. But there is a real power in prioritizing projects based on a policy rather than just ad hoc decision making, because it means you have the argument once about what your policy is, rather than debating over every single project about how important it is and how it should be decided. Yep. The amount of mental effort you spend going over and over the same thing again. And also, when you call something a policy, it's a bit like calling something a methodology. it has an authority to it that, and it makes you, as you said, Marcus, it makes you look professional. It makes you look, it gains respect, doesn't it?
Yep.
And that's what a lot of it's about. Okay. All right. Well, that's really all I wanted to say on that. I hope that's a useful strategy. I've got to say, I did crowbar that a little bit into the season, but it's something that I do all the time, and I've never really talked about on the podcast before, and so I wanted to get into it in a little bit more depth. I want to share a couple of things about... where you can find out more about that. But just before we do that, let's talk about Team Gantt. You've heard me talk about Team Gantt before. I really admire the way that they work, and they're not just them as a tool that they provide, and it is an excellent tool, but it's one of these companies that actually are committed to making project management a better discipline, to helping project managers. Let's face it, being a project manager sucks, right? It's a really shitty job to do, or I think it is. I know some people absolutely love it, but I've got so much respect for people that manage projects. I think that they're either the bravest people on the planet, or alternatively they're idiots, one or the other. It could go either way. And what I really like is anybody who can help project managers, I'm a star of, right? And Team Gantt do this because they've got all this kind of educational resources as well that you don't have to use their product to get at, right? So even if you're not going to use Team Gantt, right, make sure you go to their website and check out the stuff they're doing, because if you do any kind of project management, they're just so helpful. And they provide lots of free stuff. So, for example, they've got a free online course called The Art and Science of Leading Projects that is absolutely brilliant. It's one of the most well-produced, helpful resources for project managers and team leads that I found on project management. And I can't recommend it enough. And it's 100% free, which instantly makes it really good. They also provide weekly webinars which is superb. You should make it a podcast because that's what all the cool kids do. But they do weekly webinars that cover all sorts of different leadership and project management topics. So again, if you do nothing else, check that out. You can register for the webinar or enroll in the Art and Science of Leading Projects by visiting teamgantt.com/classes. So just to reiterate that, that's Team Gantt. Nobody can spell Gantt, or I can't. All right, I can't spell Gantt.
I can spell
Gantt. You can spell Gantt?
Yeah, I can.
I think it's, it's one of those words I always get stuck on. So it's Team Gantt. .com. That's what happens when you name it after a person. It's dumb. Don't do it. So teamgantt.com/classes, or as I told you last time, spam brett@teamgantt.com with any questions you've got about project management. He is guaranteed to answer every single one of them, I would say within a quarter of an hour, I reckon. All right. He promises on this podcast to respond to every email that is sent to him within 15 minutes. That's how organized he is. See? Because he's project manager.
Absolutely. I think 15 minutes is bloody generous, personally.
Do you? 5 minutes then.
Yeah, five.
All right. Five. So, test him and see. This is a call to action to every BOAG World listener. Send Brett an email to brett@teamgantt.com. Please do it. Please. it'll amuse me no end if you do that. Send him rubbish emails. I don't care. Just email him. Right, there we go. He told me to encourage people to email him. Yeah. So there you go.
There you go. Done.
He didn't say anything about the quality of the emails. Anyway, right. So if you want to know more about prioritizing your work, to be fair, teamgantt.com/classes is probably as good a place as any to start. But I did want to point you at two of my own blog posts. One is the one about prioritizing your website. Lewis has just come back. I like that. Lewis is suggesting that Brett needs to better define his key performance indicators. Good lesson there. So if you want to know more about that hierarchy of user needs, about a hierarchy of your website, then I wrote an article called When It Comes to Your Website, Get Your Priorities Straight. So if you Google on my site priorities, you'll get it back. In fact, that'll also give you the second post I wanted to talk about, which is the digital triage post. You could just Google digital triage and you'd get it. But you can also, the post title is How to End the Pain of Shifting Project Priorities. So those two together should do the job nicely and hopefully help you be a bit more organized in the way you prioritize the work that you do. Marcus, have you got a joke as good or as bad, depending on your point of view, as last week's? Because that was a stunner.
This is much better. Same, I believe that was from Daryl Snow, I think. And so, as is this one.
Yeah, it was.
So, did you hear about the Spanish magician? After saying Uno and Dos, he vanished without a trace.
Oh, right. Yeah, that took a while.
Other people would have been laughing out loud, Paul.
Sorry, I'm not.
Your Spanish isn't up to it.
No. I apologize. Cat in the chat room still trying to work it out.
Oh, come on. So that's Uno, good. Dos, tres. I know it's supposed to be tres or whatever it is, but it's... I wouldn't, if you have to explain it.
Andrew wants to know what last week's joke was. Can you remember what last week's one was?
You'll have to listen to the podcast, Andrew.
Okay.
I'm not saying it twice. It was that bad.
Okay. So that wraps up this week's show. Thank you very much for listening. We're back again next week for the penultimate show of the season, where we're going to be talking about the importance of having leadership skills. And I feel that I am probably the most qualified person on the planet to talk about that with my excellent leadership skills. So that will be an interesting show. But until then,
I'm letting that go. Paul and his enormous team of people that he leads.
Yeah.
That's right.
Why do you think? Yeah, exactly. Why do you think I left Headscape? Because I just, you know, can't be arsed with leading people. They're all you were all incompetent fools. I just had to leave and strike out on my own.
So, okay.
It's the only way I can be sure of intelligent conversation.
Right. Well, Lee said to me as I walked out of the office earlier to go into the meeting room, he said, make sure you say hello to Paul because I miss him. And now I'm going to repeat to him what he thinks, what you think.
No, don't, because I really like
him. Yeah, how do you feel now?
I feel very bad. And on that bombshell, we shall finish the show. Thank you very much for listening, and I'm really sorry, and goodbye.
Bye.